you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. And I'm joined by critics Andy Klein of AV Club, Wade Major of Cinegods.com, and the author of the Hollywood Heretic Substack, and Charles Solomon, Animation Authority, who writes for Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine. We begin with the Michael Keaton directed and Michael Keaton starring Knox Goes Away. The mystery thriller also stars James Marsden. The film was written by Gregory Poirier. Wade, what did you think of Knox Goes Away?
Really an intriguing film. And, you know, this is only Michael Keaton's second film as a director. His first one was in 2009, The Merry Gentleman, which is also about a hitman who is facing life struggles, and that's what he plays here. So I find this really interesting that Michael Keaton, as a director, is compelled to do these films about hitmen. Very interesting, but a very different kind of a hitman. In this case, this is about an aging hitman who has come. He's coming down with dementia, with an accelerated, very, very aggressive form of dementia that's even worse than Alzheimer's. And at the same time, his estranged son comes to him with troubles, and he has to now deal with working over his relationship with his son, repairing that relationship to some degree, rescuing him from the problem in which he finds himself, while at the same time preparing for his deterioration and the last sunset of his life. It's a very meditative film. I wouldn't say that it has all of the action elements you normally expect out of a hitman movie, but it's very well done. Michael Keaton is a much better director than I think people realize, because he's only made two films in, you know, a decade and a half. But I'd like to see him direct more and not be a hitman.
All right, Knox Goes Away, Andy.
Yeah, I like this a lot too, and the basic hook is very similar to, you may recall, Liam Neeson in Memory, where he had Alzheimer's, and that was a remake of a Flemish film, which I think we also reviewed on this show back 10 years ago or something. But given that the Keaton character has Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which essentially he's beginning to be forgetful, but he's got a couple weeks left, that it's going to progress that quickly. So there is this constant sense of tension as to whether he is going to be able to pull off what he needs to do to help his son. The plot, I don't think it'll ruin it to say that it's a little bit of Witness for the Prosecution.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But it keeps you guessing. Don't realize what's like in Witness for the Prosecution, what's happening until the very end, and Keaton is real good in it, and yes, directs it very well.
The film is Knox Goes Away, directed by Michael Keaton, who stars in it Gregory Poirier, the screenwriter. It's rated R. It's in select theaters. American Dreamer, a comedy starring Peter Dinklage, Shirley MacLaine, Kim Quinn are in the cast. Also appearances by Matt Dillon and Danny Glover. Paul Dechter, making his feature directorial debut, is at the helm. And Theodore Melfi, the screenwriter. Andy, what'd you think of American Dreamer?
I thought this was a lovely film. Peter Dinklage plays a really bitter, nasty, just down in the mouth guy. He's an economics professor, and he's also a writer. And he is desperate to own his own home, and he gets this weird arrangement with Shirley MacLaine, who is, you know, in the film supposed to be 90, which I guess she probably is. That she has this huge, beautiful house that she will sell for a song as long as she can also live there until she dies. And he figures, well, she's not going to last long. But what happens, of course, is the two of them bond. And it becomes really a struggle between Peter Dinklage's character and the litigious daughter of Shirley MacLaine. But it also becomes this kind of romance between Peter Dinklage and Shirley MacLaine, which is very tastefully put there, and again, lovely is the word that comes to mind. It reminds me of the last Peter Dinklage film I reviewed, which was the one with Marisa Tomei. I don't remember the title, which was, again, a similar thing where he's a down-and-out guy who somehow finds life renewal. And as usual, he is terrific. And Shirley MacLaine is Shirley MacLaine.
Well, and this is based apparently on a true story told on the public radio series This American Life, which we carry here on LAist 89.3. And so fascinating that they adapted that story from radio into the feature film. The movie you're thinking of, the previous Peter Dinklage film you liked so much with Marisa Tomei, was She Came to Me. Well, that was right. that was the film you were referring
Thank
to.
You.
The new one, American Dreamer, starring Peter Dinklage and Shirley MacLaine, is rated R, and it's at Lemley's Monica Film Center and the Town Center 5 in Encino. It's also available on demand at home. Demon Slayer to the Hashira Training is a Japanese animated film directed by Haruo Sotozaki. Charles, please tell us about it.
Well, the series Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba is hugely popular. Both the animation and the manga sold like 150 million copies worldwide. This is not a real film. It's the last episode of the third season of the show and the first episode of the fourth season of the show just spliced together. So it opens very powerfully. Tanjiro, our hero, who is the demon slayer of the title, of course, finally manages to off the very powerful demon he's been fighting for some time. There are lots of complications surrounding it. And so that's all very dramatic and very dynamic. But the new season starts much more slowly. Tanjiro spends a lot of the next close to an hour in bed recovering from his battles while these mysterious people, the Hashira, are setting up new levels of training for him and his friends to be able to fight even more powerful demons. And that will be the fourth season of the series. So if you're a fan of the series and know the characters and what's been going on, you'll have a great time seeing it on the big screen. If you're not familiar with the story, you're probably going to be somewhat lost.
All right. And what's your sense of how this will look on a big screen, Charles, since it is a television anime series and episodes that were made for that?
Well, we've come a long way from when things like the original Dragon Ball were shot in 16 millimeter. So I think it will look good. The one caution is that particularly the first half of it is quite violent, where they're hacking demons apart and cutting heads off, and that's still not enough to kill some of these creatures. They're very stubborn, you know. So I think it will look good on the big screen. The designs are solid and are interesting. So I think it'll work fine. Again, but if you need to know where you are when you go in.
All right. It's in select theaters. And speaking of the content that Charles was warning about, it is rated R. The animated anime series Demon Slayer to the Hashira Training is in select theaters. The romantic comedy Irish Wish stars Lindsay Lohan and Ed Spaliers. The film is directed by Janine Damian, written by Kirsten Hansen. It's streaming on Netflix and one of the few films you'll ever see that's rated G. Wade, what did you think of Irish Wish?
I don't know that I realized it was rated G, but that good for Lindsay Lohan, going back to the G. Well, this is basically one of those wish fulfillment, careful what you wish for movies. It kind of sits in the same semi-genre as Big and Groundhog Day and movies where people wake up one day and everything has changed. In this case, Lindsay Lohan has a client who is the love of her life, but he doesn't reciprocate, and she wishes that it were otherwise, and then one day wakes up and sure enough they are in fact a couple, but maybe this is not what she was really hoping for. There may be someone else who is her real soulmate. So there you go. That's the setup. It's boy meets girl, boy loses girl, or girl meets boy, girl loses boy, girl gets boy back. It's, you know, very formulaic. But it's not as kind of, as much as I felt like I should be annoyed by this movie, I kind of wasn't. So I give it props for that.
So, Andy, were you annoyed by the Irish Wish?
A little bit, because it is so hackneyed. I mean, it really is by the book.
So by the book.
One after another. And you know from the beginning that this is the wrong guy. And when she meets the guy who will become the right guy, you know it from the moment they meet. It's filled with whimsy that I don't think is particularly well directed. I mean, there's St. Bridget keeps showing up, granting wishes, and it kind of was tacky looking when St. Bridget would show up.
And we should say that the backdrop is a wedding in Ireland. So there's a lovely Irish backdrop and lots of brogues, but it doesn't have to be in Ireland. It literally could have been anywhere. It's not that special.
Yeah, except the Irish Tourist Bureau is going to love this.
Oh, it is.
So it looks beautiful, as Ireland
gorgeous,
does.
Yes. But I just, it was not funny enough for me. It was about as limp as rom-coms come.
Irish Wish, the romantic comedy starring Lindsay Lohan, Ed Spaliers, and Alexander Vlahos, Janine Damian, the writer. It's rated PG, or TVPG, I'm sorry. I'm so unused to saying G, I can't even say it without putting a P in there. The film is streaming on Netflix. The French horror film The Animal Kingdom is directed by Thomas Caillé, the film also co-written by him. It's in French with English subtitles. Andy, what did you think of The Animal Kingdom?
I like this a lot. It's not really a horror film. It's interesting. It's a monster film that is not so much a horror film. The setup is that there is some sort of disease or plague or something that is causing people to mutate in a way that mutations have never, ever happened in the history of the world, which is late-onset mutation, that adults are suddenly taking on animal characteristics and turning into half animals or three-quarters animals or eventually totally animals, which makes communication with them really difficult. The hero of the film is this kid whose mom is one of the creatures, as they call them, who has escaped from the holding facility where they keep them. And a lot of the film is about the fact that these critters are not, in fact, a threat, except that people have cast them as outcasts. And that means that there's constant warfare and the animals defending themselves. And there's a brief moment where somebody says, well, we should do what they do in Norway, which is have a big game reserve for them and leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
But in France, apparently that's not working. And the son in the film, the son of Romain Duris, who is the big name in the film, begins to see that not only his mother has turned into an animal, but he's beginning to have the signs. It is not, in fact, a metaphor for puberty, which I kept looking for, but it is a really sort of humanistic film, or bestiality.
How are the effects? I mean, it sounds, Wade, like this is, you know, effects-wise, challenging.
It's challenging, but it's a French film. So it's not done like a Hollywood tentpole film. It is much more focused on character and intimacy, and they don't sort of show off the effects the way that a Hollywood CGI monstrosity would. They give you glimpses, and they kind of tease you.
They work around it.
And that way, when they actually do show you a little bit more, it's that much more impressive. So they're much more judicious about it, more French, I guess. I mean, really, this is a mashup between a zombie movie like 28 Days Later, Island of Dr. Moreau, and X-Men. That's really what
it is. Yeah, I was thinking of Island of Dr. Moreau.
It's got all of those elements. The all of the themes in X-Men about being outcasts and minorities and so forth, that's all here. The only thing that bothered me is that we never get to the root of the how and the why this is happening. And I understand that when you're dealing with allegory and metaphor and these kinds of fantastic premises, it's almost beside the point. But at a certain point, it does nag at you because there are so many different types of mutations.
The Animal Kingdom is the film, a monster movie, as Andy Klein says. It's unrated in French with English subtitles. It's available at the Alamo Draft House in downtown L.A., and it's available on demand as well. We'll continue on Film Week with our critics. Next up is the Japanese animated sci-fi film Neon Genesis Evangelion. We'll hear about that and other films that are in the lineup when we come back in just 1 minute on Film Week on LAist 89.3.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle, and coming up just a little bit later this hour, we'll reprise my conversation with Christopher Nolan. Of course, Oppenheimer, the huge winner at last Sunday's Academy Awards, a chance to hear him talk about the making of Oppenheimer. Christopher Nolan in conversation with me later this hour. I'm joined by critics Charles Solomon, Wade Major, and Andy Klein, and we're going to hear from Charles about the animated feature Neon Genesis Evangelion, the end of Evangelion, which is being re-released. This originally came out in 1997. It has two directors associated with it from the anime TV series. Charles, what do you think of the reissue of this?
Well, it's never been shown in U.S. theaters before, and it's quite spectacular, quite weird, too. It's one of the weirdest films you will ever see. When Hideaki Anno ended his Watershed series Neon Genesis Evangelion in 1996, he said he didn't know what the ending was, that he'd just come out of a severe depression. He didn't know what became of these characters. So the ending didn't satisfy anybody. He recut the last episodes as one feature that was Death and Rebirth in 1997. Still didn't work. He did a completely different film later that year, which is End of Evangelion. And it is, the only thing I can compare it to is animated schizophrenia. There's all sorts of art styles. Some of the last part of the story is there. But then you have characters fusing with supernatural creatures. There's Kabbalistic legends thrown in. There's Christian apocalyptic theology. And it's, as I said, one of the most bizarre films I've ever seen, and it ultimately means whatever you care to read into it.
Wow. Neon Genesis Evangelion, the end of Evangelion, getting its U.S. theatrical release. It's rated TV-MA in Japanese with English subtitles, and this, again, was created back in 1997, though it's the first theatrical release here in the U.S. It's in select theaters 2 days this coming Sunday and Wednesday of next week, March 20th. The Canadian romantic comedy French Girl stars Zach Braff and Evelyn Brochu. The film's written and directed by James A. Woods and Nicholas Wright. Wade.
It's Meet the Parents. It's basically Meet the French Canadian Parents. But otherwise, it's exactly the same movie. Zach Braff plays the Ben Stiller part. Evelyn Brochu, who is on television, Orphan Black, some people may hear, wonderful French-Canadian actress. She's in the Terry Polo part. She even looks a little bit like Terry Polo. So they're not even trying to hide this. And the wonderful but strangely named French actor Luc Picard, not Jean-Luc Picard, but Luc Picard, plays the De Niro part. And it's a little, it's got a few other interesting twists to it. The idea here is that you know that Zach Braff and Evelyn Brochu, their wonderful relationship until she gets a job offer to be a chef at a fancy restaurant from an old friend in Quebec. So they go to Quebec City and meet the parents and the whole thing. But her old friend is Vanessa Hudgens, who's also a former lover. She's never told that to Zach. So that twist then becomes the tension, the generator of tension for the rest of the film. Otherwise, it's perfectly charming, but if you've seen Meet the Parents, you've seen this movie.
All right. The film French Girl is rated R. Again, it's written and directed by James A. Woods and Nicholas Wright. It's at the Regal Long Beach and available on demand starting Tuesday of next week, March 19th. The Prank, a comedy thriller starring Rita Moreno, Connor Kolopsis, and Ramona Young. The film directed by Maureen Barucha and written by Rebecca Flynn White and Zach White. The Prank, Andy.
I enjoyed this film, and a lot of it was Rita Moreno, who was probably 90 when this was filmed a couple of years ago. She's 92 now, and she's quite credibly playing a high school teacher.
We just saw her at the Oscars as one of the presenters.
And she is really the heart of the film. She plays the nastiest teacher in the world. She's going to flunk everybody in the class because one kid cheated, and it's college admissions time. And so the hero and his best friend, who is a hacker girl, decide to play a prank, which is the hacker fakes photos of the teacher with a student who mysteriously disappeared and fakes romantic notes between them and essentially sets up on the dark web this rumor that the teacher killed this kid. And the most amusing thing about the film probably is that all the cops and all the news people on local news all had her as a teacher. So they're all totally sympathetic to this rumor. That's they're funny. Like, yes, she was the meanest teacher I ever had. I wouldn't put it past her. And then the teacher's husband dies of a heart attack from the stress. And that is still a comic point in the film. They try to retract this thing, and it doesn't work. And then the kid she supposedly killed turns up, but then things go crazy. Okay. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very funny, and it's just grand to see Rita Moreno chewing the scenery here.
The Prank is the film starring Rita Moreno. It's rated R. It's in select theaters. The comedy Snack Shack is set in Nebraska City, 1991. Connor Sherry and Gabriel LaBelle star. Adam Remeyer is the writer-director. Wade.
Really a mixed bag here. At first, I wasn't liking this film at all. It's a coming of age film, period coming of age. I hate talking about the 90s as a period. It's very disturbing.
Just the other day.
But it's a period coming of age film set in the 90s. Two friends, Connor Sherry and Gabrielle LaBelle, kind of bad kids. They, you know, they're always gambling and smoking and running schemes and scams. And they are finally given a chance to be a little bit legit by running the snack shack during the summer at the local swimming pool. And introduce romance, one girl, two boys. And the girl, Mika Abdallah, is amazing. Absolutely a revelation. Going to be a huge star. She steals the film. Absolutely steals the film. Camera loves her. She loves the camera back. I mean, it's really a discovery.
How what's the age range of these young people?
Oh, like 15, 16,
okay.
I guess it is.
So they're teens.
Yeah, they're teens. She is absolutely astonishing. The two boys, what's interesting, Gabrielle LaBelle played the young Steven Spielberg in The Fablemans.
Oh, yeah.
Totally different here. You forget the other part. I mean, he's very good. He's so dislikable here. He's so conniving and so completely amoral that it just erases that other person. performance. So it, to that degree, even though I didn't like the character, I'm very impressed by him as an actor, that he's able to do this 180. Very, very, very sharp. But, you know, the film has some wonderful coming-of-age moments, very soft, you know, earnest stuff. You know, the old-fashioned young love stuff is very well done. But when they're really trying to play up just how crass and coarse these boys are, then it really feels like it's trying too hard. So it never quite gets it right, but there are merits that are worth watching.
Snack Shack, the comedy, is in select theaters. It's rated R. Exuma is the story of a wealthy Korean-American family in Los Angeles. The film is written and directed by Jae Hyun Jang. Andy, what'd you think of Exuma?
I wish I'd liked it more. It has a slow-building creepiness, and it stars Choi Min-sik from Old Boy, who is a favorite Korean actor of mine. But it is one of these films where, as in Poltergeist, the people who are supposed to be the experts at dealing with the supernatural stuff keep finding out that they're wrong. And more complications happen, and probably two or three levels too many complications that pushes the film to over 2 hours. Like I say, there's a certain creepiness, but I can't strongly recommend it.
All right. What about Korean culture? I mean, are there interesting aspects of that, you know, that are in the film?
I don't know if this stuff is
or just
is
made
real.
Up for the movie.
I think,
yeah.
It's all about geomancy, which is where you place the graves in a fortuitous position. It's like feng shui for grave sites. I don't know if that's real or not.
Exuma is the film. It's in select theaters, and it's unrated. Hundreds of Beavers, an action-adventure comedy, which stars Olivia Fraves, Wes Tank, and Doug Mancheski. Mike Cheslick is the director and co-screenwriter of the film. Wade.
I hated this movie.
Oh, gosh.
I really did. And I'm going to let Andy speak for himself on this. But, like, because if you were to say this movie is like like a healthy helping of Guy Madden and Chuck Jones with a side of David Lynch, that's tailor-made for Andy.
Yes.
I will let Andy address why this does not meet those high standards. That's what they're trying for. I think this could have been a charming 10-minute short. As it is, it's like one guy who discovered some digital tools that he could sort of blue screen himself and do all kinds of fun tricks with, and then dress a bunch of people in some beaver costumes, and then let's tell a story about a guy, a trapper, who's got to defeat an army of beavers, which basically consists of his friends in beaver suits. At 105 minutes, it makes you homicidal. It makes
I'm so impressed you stayed with it, Wade.
It's just unbelievable. It just taxes every ounce of patience that a human being can muster.
Andy. Yeah, I loved the title. I saw the trailer and I thought, black and white, you know, slapstick comedy, sounds great. It is indeed awful. The jokes, a lot of actual lifted jokes from Roadrunner cartoons, which not only don't work in live action, but the timing isn't. Chuck Jones knows to a frame how to time those things. And these jokes just fall flat, and it goes on and on and on
forever.
And never gets any place.
But as you bring this up, and Wade, you mentioning about the mashup of the three directors,
yeah.
I keep thinking, what would a movie like that puts Chuck Jones, the great Warner Brothers animator, together with Guy Madden and David
Lynch? I don't know if it can succeed, but boy, I'd like to see somebody try better than this.
The film we're talking about is Hundreds of Beavers. It's unrated. It's at Lemley's Royal Theater in West L.A. and Lemley's Glendale location as well. The Neon Highway stars Bo Bridges, Rob Mays, and Sam Hennings. William Wages is the director. It's a film that has music at the center of it. Bo Bridges playing a washed-up legend of a singer, Claude Allen. This is about Nashville and pitching songs and the like. Wade?
Yeah, Bo is trying to win an Oscar for playing a washed-up country singer like his brother. Not going to quite do it here. He's very good, but he's really the best thing about this. It's about a young aspiring singer who has some tragedy in his past, and he meets this washed up old, you know, Nashville legend played by Beau Bridges, and they team up to make the younger guy's song a hit. But of course, Nashville today is not what it was when the Beau Bridges character was in his prime. So there are, you know, all kinds of hurdles along the way. Relationship kind of builds and falls apart and comes back together. It plays up a lot of cliches in this kind of a genre. But if you're not the song is very good, by the way. I mean, the main song that this all built around is a terrific song, but it's a little flabby narratively. It just can't quite find its momentum. It can't quite find its narrative groove. And if you don't love country, you're not going to love the film.
It's too bad. When I saw this on the list, I was hopeful. Yeah. Beau Bridges. I thought, okay, this sounds like a strong character.
And it is. He's very good in it.
Fabulous Baker Boys. He was terrific.
Oh my gosh, so good. But it could have used some tightening. I think maybe some judicious 15 minutes worth of editing. It would pull this thing together.
The Neon Highway film we're talking about, rated PG-13 at the AMC Burbank Town Center. And the documentary streaming on Peacock starting next Monday, Stormy, which looks at Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, unless if you didn't live through this for the past 8 years or whatever it's been, this would probably be a revelation. But it's just too close. We've seen this on the news. There's nothing new here until they get a little bit into her private life, her marriage, the way that it falls apart, and some of the affairs that are party to that. The film kind of finds its footing only in the last 20 minutes, where she is humanized. You see her crying. You realize she's a mother. She loves her daughter. Her family's messed up. She's deeply flawed. And this entire affair, she was taken advantage of, everything to do with Avenatti and Trump. She wishes none of it had ever happened. And you do realize she's quite vulnerable and oftentimes her own worst enemy.
Stormy, the documentary, is streaming on Peacock starting next Monday, March 18th, rated TVMA. All right, it's Film Week on LA, a State 89.3. Larry Mantle with our critics Wade Major, Andy Klein, and Charles Solomon. Coming up next, I'm going to be talking with Christopher Nolan as we reprise an interview with him from, of course, prior to the Oscars. And then Oppenheimer, his film, of course, had a very huge night, including Best Picture. He won Best Director after all the nominations that he had received. He finally wins it this time. And, of course, the acting performances honored as well for the film. So we'll talk with him about everything involved with Oppenheimer. 7 total Academy Awards for Oppenheimer at last Sunday's Oscars. It's Film Week on LA, a State 89.3. Our interview to come in just a few minutes.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.